My name is Jill Wolf. I'm 37 years old. Today is June 17th, 2017. I'm at the Chicago Cultural Center, and I'm with my friend and colleague.
My name is Clara Williams, and I'm 56 years old, and today is June 17, 2017. My location is the Cultural Center in Chicago. My relationship is my son and co-worker.
My name is Dante Williams. I'm 36 years old. Today's date is June 17, 2017. We're at the Chicago Cultural Center, and my relationship to the interviewer is colleague, friend, and advocate, and my relationship to Clara is my mother.
I'm so excited to be getting to sit here with both of you. Clara, thank you for birthing this handsome, strapping man next to you, who is somebody I get to work with on a daily basis.
Welcome.
Tell me a little bit about how you would describe your son.
My son is the most intelligent, the most bright son. He's lovable. He loves to work very hard. He always tries to put the family first in whatever he do. And he's just an all-around wonderful kid.
Dante, tell me about the woman sitting next to you here.
Wow, just awesome, amazing, strong, persevering, my backbone and my motivation in life. You know, she's everything to me, and I wouldn't be where I am today without her, and she's just, it's my world right here. It's my mom.
I feel that. I don't know if I could have said it better about my mom. I love you, Clara, and I'm really lucky to get to work with your son. Dante, you remember when you interviewed with me, we've interviewed together. Our time has come over years for us to work together. Maybe you could tell me a little bit about the most recent interview, what you remember about what pulled at my heartstrings.
During our most recent interview, I was applying for the position of Hepatitis C program coordinator, and there was a portion of the interview where I had to pitch the program or the importance of Hepatitis C. And during that presentation, I told the story of my last memory of my dad. And the last memory of my dad, I had, framed it as, I was growing up on the west side of Chicago, and I asked you to imagine for a second that inside of an apartment on the west side, there was a man sitting in a chair and a little boy wearing Scooby-Doo underwear, and the man in the chair asked for the little boy to come over and sit on his lap, and so the little boy sat on his lap, and he looked at him and told him, "Son, today you're gonna be the man in the house pretty soon." And so that story was my actual story of my last remembrance of my dad.
Do you remember that, Clara?
Yes.
Were you around at that point?
Yes. Yes.
So your dad, Jimmy. We can mm-hmm. call him Jimmy, yeah?
Jimmy,
yeah.
Yep.
Tell me what happened to your dad, either one of you, or tell me what happened to Jimmy and what brought you ultimately to interview for this coordinator position and bring your dad into the picture of using as an example to interview and clearly get a job?
Jimmy was sick for a long time, and he did not tell me that. We went on with our everyday life. We did everything together. He was a guy that was always up and going, moving, never sat still for a minute. And over a year or so, he still did not let me know that he was sick. It was something that he took on himself, all by himself. I did not find out that he was sick until I had to take him to the doctor. When he stopped eating, and he stopped going to work, then I knew something was wrong. So I called his mom because he did not want to go to the doctor, and he had never been to the doctor since we had been together. So I knew something was wrong. I called his mom, and his mom asked me to take him on to the doctor. I took him over to Cook County, and there at Cook County Hospital, they diagnosed him after running a number of tests, found out that he had liver cancer. And they gave us a couple of options, and so he wanted to do the surgery. And at that time, the doctors did tell us that nothing is guaranteed. His chances were very slim. So he stayed there for a couple of days until they got him prepared for the surgery. Once he was ready for the surgery, they did the surgery. And at that time, they came back to tell me that, you know, unfortunately, the cancer had spread it. So, you know, went from liver cancer to something else and to something else. And so at that point in time, you know, the doctors, you know, they just, you know, they told me, well, you know, you can kind of prepare for the worst. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, there was nothing else they could do. So they brought him out of the surgery. He was in recovery. And probably around 30, 40 minutes later, he died. Mm. So I never knew nothing about liver cancer. I never knew nothing about cancer itself until his death.
Mm-hmm. Dante, knowing what you know now and working in the fields that we work in, what's it like to sit there and hear your mom tell a story about your dad and knowing what you know?
Yeah, it's just... You know, it's hard to hear because, you know, looking at where we are now with what we know about hepatitis C and liver cancer and those things, you know, my dad, if, you know, my dad would have maybe been a little bit more open to going to the doctor, and even at that point, we still didn't have the medical advancements that we have now, you know, but it may have changed the direction of time, you know. It may have kept him here a little bit longer. And, you know, my dad was in Vietnam. You know, when we look at the people that are most at risk for hepatitis C, and I don't know for sure that he had hepatitis C, but I do know that he would have been at high risk. You know, he was a Vietnam vet. He's African-American. He was a baby boomer. He fit all of those cohorts that the CDC now says is the highest risk of hepatitis C, which eventually leads to liver cancer. And from, you know, just my memory of him and what my mom says, you know, he was here one day and he was just gone the next.
Yeah. What does that mean for you, Dante, in terms of sort of what do you hold close to you in waking up every day and, you know, Monday through Friday, shall we say, and getting up to do a job? I mean, how does that influence your mission and working with me?
I mean, the impact is great because the lives that we're losing due to this disease, the undiagnosed and the misdiagnosis of this disease, it doesn't have to happen. We're in a state now where, you know, the technology is there, the treatment is there. We've got a few other barriers, but no one should have to lose their father, their brother, their son, their mother to this disease anymore, because it shouldn't happen. We have what we need in order to fix this, to right this ship.
Yeah. And so, Clara, you're young and you have a 3-year-old baby when your partner dies. Mm-hmm. Tell me, then, I mean, how do you pick up from there? You go home to this little man wearing Scooby-Doo pants and... What sticks out for you? How'd you move forward?
Well, the way I planned it in my head was that he gave me this child that looks exactly like him. Mm. And everybody used to say I spit him out, you know, because he looked just like his dad. Mm. And he gave me the willpower to keep pushing because he was a very strong person. And he never gave up on anything. And, you know, he reminds me of my kids sitting here. He was always feisty.
Jimmy was feisty.
Always feisty, yes, yes, yes. So the more pain he was in, I guess he put that face on to be strong for me and for his son. When it all kind of bore down and I had to realize, like, because he did everything. He took care of everything. So now I had to come to terms with, okay, now you have to get up and you have to start over again. You have to pay the rent. You got to make sure the baby get to school. You got to do this. You got to do that because he's no longer here. But I had the family support because my mom was always there, you know, and I had my brothers and sisters, so they were there too. But the hard part was just the hard part was just losing somebody that I loved because he was my first love. I can remember him just being there, even for my family. He took care of my brothers and sisters. He was always the giving guy at work, you know. I mean, he was the giving guy. Needed somebody to stay over, he was always there. So I think I got a lot of my strength from him just saying, you can do this, you know. You can make it, you know. I never can imagine all the pain he was in, you know, but he was in pain.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he stuck it out to the end. So I've learned to think about all the good things even now. You know, I think about all the good times we had fishing, taking me down to Arkansas. You know, he did all these things for us, you know. So, yeah. But now, you know, I'm at peace with it now because, like I said, he gave me a beautiful, wonderful son. Mm-hmm. And he's my backbone when I need to have that get up and go, mom, come on, you can do this, you know. So I love him and I always love him. Even though he's in heaven, he gave me the strength and the motivation to keep going. Don't give up, you know, don't give up. And I think that's where my son gets a lot of that from, too, you know. We both were strong-minded people. And, you know, you're going to do the best of what you do. So I think with all that, you know, I've learned to be more stern with myself and saying, you got to start. He gave me the guidance. He taught me how to do things that I did not know how to do, you know. And even though he was a much, much older person than I was, he gave me the part to say, you know, you can do this and you can be strong. So this is how I still remember him.
And you have this beautiful, wonderful son who, yes, you know, as you describe Jimmy, like you kind of might as well describe Dante.
Yes.
So listening to what you're saying, here's Jimmy who, caring and intelligent, worked hard, family guy, took care of everybody. I know that to be my colleague Dante sitting right there. But also was a guy who didn't necessarily take as good a care of himself, right?
Correct.
And maybe had he, things would have been different.
Correct.
What, knowing your baby boy sitting right next to you and knowing that he is intelligent and warm and loving and cares for everybody, what do you want to say to him around anything, really? What kind of messages might you want to share knowing his father and knowing him and knowing, obviously, knowing you?
What I'd like to share with everyone is that Jimmy and Dante are like the twins. They think alike. They walk a lot. Mm. They talk a lot. And they love to be around people. And they love to help people. And I see a lot of that in my son, Dante, because he goes out of his way to help anybody. Don't matter if they ever did anything to him or not, he'll still be there, you know, by their side. And it was the same way with his dad. Even though his dad ran into a lot of situations, it's like, okay, you know, I take that, moving on. But if you made him mad, it was a different story, you know. So it kind of balances out as far as, you know, being respectful, because Dante is a very respectful person. He's not going to let you push him to the end. And that was the same way about his dad, you know. We can resume things by talking. We can resume things by, you know, just being calm, cool, and collect. And that's my son.
That's right. That's who I know to be.
That's my son. Like I said, Dante is one of those guys that get up and he go, you know. And at times when I'm driving with my son, you know, he reminds me of his dad so much with driving.
Oh, my. So slow and deliberate.
Oh, you know, be like, okay, you know, we're going to move a little bit here, son, you know. I'm not the very fastest driver, but I can drive a little bit, you know.
Claire, I thought it was just me.
No. But then now when his father would get on the expressway, that was totally different. He'd go, you know. And so I sit back and I look at my son sometime when he's driving, I'll be like, oh, God, okay, you're like your dad. Moving on, you know. I said, man, I drive a little faster than you do, you know. That's my son, you know. And like I said, you know, he's just one of them guys that, you know, I mean, he's there for you to the end. So, and it's like his dad.
And Claire,
to the end.
I didn't know Jimmy, but I bet he walked something like this, right? He was kind of short and squat. He obviously got some muscles, but he's kind of got this kind of strut, right? It's almost like he could have been a football player and maybe his knees kind of hurting, but he just, you know, he's strolling and he's...
Oh, yeah.
That's Dante.
Mm-hmm. That's his dad.
That's Jimmy.
Yep. That's Jimmy. That's his dad. Yes. Yes.
We're talking about you, Dante.
I know. What's funny is my daughter has the same walk.
Yes, she does.
It's hereditary.
Yes, she does. Do you walk like that, Claire?
No.
This is Jimmy's side, huh?
That's the Jimmy side, yes. That's the Jimmy side.
Dante, what's it like to hear? Like, you're a lot like your pops. I mean, what's that like for you?
Wow. It's eye-opening. You know, I've you know, seen this picture. I have a few memories. I hear a few stories and... But hearing the relationship of, you know, how I interact with people and, you know, just my everyday way of doing things is a lot like him. It makes me proud. It makes me feel like, you know, he's still living on.
Your face is just lit up right now. I mean, I don't know if I've ever seen your face so bright.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I still get excited, you know, talking about my dad. It's just one of those areas that it never gets old, or, you know, I never get tired of hearing more about them.
What would you like to know that you don't? Or maybe like to share that you do know?
I don't know. I think one of the things that I always admired about my dad is that he just had a make it happen attitude. You know, my dad, I can remember, you know, the stories of him. He always... kept a pocket full of money, and he always bought everyone around him, you know, make sure all their needs were met. He would have a pocket full of money and just give it all away to his family. And, you know, he just supported everyone. I mean, he was just that guy who everyone could depend on. And, you know, he was just a support for everyone. It just instills that value in me even more than it's naturally there. It just reinforces it, rather, I should say.
Well, you do a good job of it. I'm finding myself emotional here. I feel very grateful that I get to work with you. And the work we do is special.
It is.
And me as a Jewish woman who has a mission, and social justice is my thing, I see you as my partner in crime or partner in social justice to change the world, especially here in Chicago. And we just do it through the vehicle of hepatitis C. But I guess I want to let you know that I really believe in you and who you are and where you come from, and hope that together we can do really great things, because I do believe in you. And I want you to believe in the relationship and the power of colleagues who can be friends, who can be family. So to you, Claire, just thanks for birthing a fantastic human being, and Jimmy, for somebody spit him out of his mouth somewhere. So thanks for spitting him out. I I'm grateful to both of you.
Thank you. Thank you.
So you go home to this 3-year-old. Mm-hmm. Something else happened not too long after that. And Dante, you were really young and still have a memory of this. Take me into what's going on about 6 months after Jimmy passes away.
Well, 6 months after Jimmy passes away, my mom passes away. It was one day I'm at work. My sister calls and she says there's a fire over at the house. And, you know, and that was that. I leave work, rushing home, and get there, and there was a huge fire. And my mom, she was there. My sister was able to get out. And there were some neighbors upstairs. And this young lady had about 6 children, and all of them were very small. My mom goes back into the building to go upstairs to warn her about the fire. Mm-hmm. And my mom was burnt in the fire. She was the only one seriously hurt in the fire. So that took a lot out of me. I don't think my life was almost pretty gone from there. You know, first losing Jimmy and then 6 months and then losing my mom. So that was 2 funerals back to back that I had to deal with, and that, you know, I had to put the family back together because my sisters and brothers were so small. So that, you know, that meant that I had to come in to be a mother figure for my son plus my brothers and sisters. So it was a very hard moment for me in my life, you know. And with dealing with that, you know, then I had a sister and brother to have a nervous breakdown. So that was another issue that I had to deal with. Myself, I also had a nervous breakdown. But I guess with the willpower and the Lord giving me strength, mm-hmm. I had to pull myself together in order to take care of the rest of the family. Mm-hmm. So that was my goal to do. So that was very, you know, tragic.
Claire, can I ask you, you know, nervous breakdown is a term that we use in our culture that I don't know that people really understand what that means. What did a nervous breakdown mean for you? What did that look like?
The nervous breakdown hit me when I realized that I've lost the love of my life, and then turned around and then I lost my mother. Mm-hmm. My mind was not coping. You know, I couldn't think how to get it back together. I couldn't function. I couldn't get up. I couldn't take care of my baby. I couldn't do nothing. I was gone. The doctors, when I fainted in the room with my mother, the doctors told me that I had to leave, and I just couldn't leave. I couldn't leave my mom. And so finally they told me, you got to go. You have to go. And then from there, my mind was just gone. Mm. You know, it was gone. And at that time, my brothers and sisters didn't even see my mom. It was just myself because I was
the oldest.
Yes. I was the oldest girl. Yes. And so everything was kind of, you know, on me.
Yes.
But once they got me, you know, out of her room and, you know, and once again, people do not realize when your loved one is near death, they do not speak. If they're near death and they have tubes and all these things on them in their mouth. And my mom, with her eyes, said, I love you. And when she said that, it brought back Jimmy again because Jimmy did the same thing, you know. And so with that, I knew she was gone, you know, I knew she was gone. And so it took a long time for me to get myself back together. But I had to because the rest of the family relied on me and nobody else, you know. We was a close-knit family, so that meant that Bebe, well, I'm sorry, my nickname is Bebe, so that meant that, you know, Bebe, what we gonna do? Mm-hmm. How we gonna do this? How we gonna do that? And then I had to realize that, you know, you got to snap out of it. You got to take the medicine. You got to see what the doctors are saying, you know, and I didn't want to listen to the doctors. I didn't want to listen to nobody. But after a while, I did take medication for a little while. And They gave me counseling because that was like the top thing. And then they also gave us family counseling to deal with all the other issues that we had to deal with. And unfortunately, you know, I did not know how it affected my brother and my sister, but it affected them very hard. My sister, which is the middle child, she had a career going. She graduated from cosmetology school. She was on her way working, whole nine yards. But by her being there with my mom, she took the most of it. So it was very difficult for me to see her go through what she was going through. Yeah. And then my brother, he was the oldest one, but he really never dealt with things. It was always me, the oldest girl, that dealt with everything else. So it took a lot for him. So it was a lot of adjustment that we had to do as a family. And then after the doctors realized that my sister, the middle one who was there with my mom, it really destroyed her. It took a lot away from her. And even though this happened 30-some-odd years ago, still to this day, my sister is still not right, you know. My brother, he went through a whole lot, you know, as far as, you know, family, trying to keep his marriage together, trying to keep his kids together. And unfortunately, you know, he couldn't do it.
You know, Claire, you mentioned some really important things around getting help, going to counseling, taking medications, and the person that you describe with for yourself as a nervous breakdown is not who I see sitting in front of me today. And yes, a lot of time has passed. A lot of people don't use the tools that you chose to use. What would you say to people who maybe are struggling and feeling like they are having a nervous breakdown and that there is help and they don't use those tools?
Well, what I've noticed is that people sometimes take their pride and they don't want to open up. They don't want to ask for help. And sometimes when I sit and I talk to some people, because what the field that I'm in is more of people with disabilities and mental challenges. I live with it. I work with it every single day. And I encounter a lot with people. And sometimes when I sit down and I talk to some of my people that I work with, clients, their guardians, and I'm like, there's nothing wrong with asking for help. Because you ask for help, you think people are judging you because they think you're mental or they think you have other issues going on. That's not how it is. It's that when you ask for help, you're asking for people to come in to listen to what you're saying. And if they feel as though there's a problem, they're going to let you know. If they feel as though you need to see a counselor, they're going to let you know. If they feel as though you need to see a doctor, they're going to let you know. And if they feel as though you need to see a psychiatrist, they're going to let you know. I never was ashamed to go and sit in front of a psychiatrist to talk to a psychiatrist. I've had to do that on a number of occasions with my sister, who has mental issues. And I had to come to the term that she's schizophrenic, you know. And it runs in my family. So that right there was the key thing. I take nothing for granted. You have the good days and you have the bad days. And I let people know it's okay to take medication. It's okay to take a time out to go to talk to a counselor or psychiatrist. It's all right, you know, because they're there to listen to you. Mm-hmm. And the more that you open up and the more that you tell your story, they can guide you and they can give you what you need. And it's a blessing now that it's becoming more open and more out to people. Mm-hmm. A lot of people used to take and hide their kids away or hide their family members away because they didn't want to be bothered with them. My sister that had the nervous breakdown, I go to see her at least two times to three times a month. because she's still my family. Even though she's going through her issues, even though she had a nervous breakdown, even though she's schizophrenic, that's still my sister. Mm-hmm. And I believe and I know that my mom would have wanted us to continue to take care of her. Yes. And also my brother. So this is something that, you know, I've learned to do. And it's something that needs to be talked about more. People always try to hide it. They don't want other people to know that they have somebody in the family that has a problem. So with me, by me working with the different clients that I work with and by me having family members in my family gives me the courage to keep on pushing and keep on doing for others as I believe they would do for me if I needed the help.
Mm-hmm. So. And Dante, it's no question why you're in the helping profession. Tell me, obviously it's in your blood, but tell me what it means to you to do what you do and really make the choice to be in the profession that you're in.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I think deep down inside, like you said, it's in my blood. There's this need to help, to have this balance in my life where, you know, I'm given to the community and then ultimately the world itself by, you know, making a difference and making an impact, you know, and that comes in a variety of different ways. As of right now, it's through Hep C and the Hep C program. And previous to that, it was in the HIV program. So it transforms itself. It shows itself in different lights in my life. But ultimately, it's about just making an impact and helping people move forward in their life, regardless of where they are and whatever stage they are. I just, you know, I have this need to make an impact in a person's life. And ultimately, to me, that ripples out to the community and, the world itself.
Yeah. Anything that either one of you want to say to each other, or let each other know, or questions that you have of each other?
Mom, how did you get so awesome?
Hey, learn it through my son. Learn it through my son. You know, like I said, my son is like, you know, the backbone with me. You know, he gives me the determination to keep on fighting, to keep on pushing. And I was really surprised when he wanted to come into the field of working with, you know, clients with, you know, diseases and other issues that they might have.
Why were you surprised?
Because I thought that he would probably go into like artwork because he loved to draw, you know, or, you know, working with computers and things like that, mm-hmm. you know. So it was very, very wonderful to find out that he was in the field of the social mm-hmm. world, you know. So, and even though I've been doing social services for the last past almost 30 years, it was just a pleasure for me to know that my son is out there helping others. So, right there, I give him a high five, son.
Anything you want to say to that, Dante?
Oh, I get it from you naturally, so.
Yeah. Claire, what would you wish for your son? What do you wish for your son? What would you like to tell him in terms of wishes for him?
With my son, I know that he is going to strive for the best. And I know that he loves doing what he do. And then he also loved doing other things. So I know that he would take all of what he have and give it all his best and whatever he might do. And so with that, you know, he's a terrific guy. You know, I mean, he's a hard worker.
He's already got the job. You don't you need know, to tell him he's got the job.
You know, so with that and striving on, he's going to be awesome at whatever he do.
So sitting over here, okay, this is what I see and what I hear. So Jimmy is this helping guy, might as well be Dante, right?
Right.
And you're a lot like him, and that's really amazing, okay? And here's a guy who helped everybody but didn't know how to ask for help.
Correct.
Okay? You got a backbone of a mother who's smart and strong and has learned a lot of stuff in her years. And part of what she's learned is how to ask for help. Okay, so you're a lot like your mom too. And I wish for you to take the best, that you take the best of your dad and the best of your mom and learn as a young Black man how to ask for help, because we all need it and deserve it, and it's a skill. So as your boss, I'm going to push on you a little bit about that. How do you feel about that?
About what, ask for help, or are you pushing on me?
Both. Both, I suppose.
You know, I ask for help when it's needed. You know, we all reach that point at different stages where we feel like, you know, it's okay, now is the time to ask for help, and it's okay to ask for help. You know, I don't turn my nose up to help or think that it makes me weak. And anyway, I'm just a person that's used to carrying my own load. So, yeah, I mean, I'm okay with that. I'm okay.
And I'm used to carrying my own load, too. But I have to say, working with you, it's helpful when you grab one of my handles and help me pull. And I would imagine it's probably helpful when I grab one of your handles and help you pull.
Yeah.
Lightens the load for all of us.
Right.
Right.
Right? And then we can do really cool things together. As we sort of bring things to, you know, a culmination here, anything you sort of want to say, ask of each other, or let me know, or details, the stories that we didn't get into? Anything you can think of?
Well, I would just like to thank you for giving me the opportunity, you and my son, for telling my story. Never actually really sat down and told a story, so it makes a big difference when you're actually sitting live with someone and you're telling a story. And then also, you're sharing it with the world. Because you never know what a person is going through. You never know how a person can take what you have given out and use it. So I want to thank you and my son for giving me that opportunity to do that.
I wish we had so much more time, because you have so much more story to tell.
Yes.
So much more to tell. And
yes.
40 minutes does no justice.
Yes.
Thank you for being here. Dante,
thank you.
Anything on your end?
I think what I have to say is just really just a message to anyone that might listen to this. You know, if you have an inkling that something may be going on with a family member, regardless of who it is, you know, ask, inquire, pay attention, because sometimes we get so caught up in our own mess and our own lives that we're missing an opportunity to make an intervention in somebody else's life. So just pay attention, and you know, if you see some signs, you know, especially health wise or mental health wise, you know, say something and do what you can to push that person in the right direction, because I know myself, sometimes I need a little push. And you know, Jill, you push me. And Mom, you kind of ganged up on me too this morning, so you know, and I appreciate that. And you know, I just ask for others to do the same. And if you know, you guys know of anyone that was born between the years of 1945 to 1965, please encourage them to get tested for hepatitis C, because the end result of an undiagnosed and untreated hepatitis C virus is ultimately death, and we can avoid that. So please.
Yeah, in honor of Jimmy, let's get a Jimmy event going and test all these men, huh?
Yeah, that sounds great.
And you know, you can always push back on me. I welcome it.
Okay.
And you do sometimes. Anything else, guys?
That's
I appreciate
it.
You both. Very
thank
much.
You.
Appreciate
thank
you.
Thank you. Thank you.